Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast. My name is Hakeem Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time. And with me is the OG co-host, Ryan Whitfield. Hey, Ryan. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing freaking fantastic. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm still hurting from last week. Week 8 was a little rough for a Bears fan, so it took me a while to come around to talking about football again, I can tell you that. Hey, let me ask you this, because this last week wasn't really football the focus. It was World Series week, a much shorter World Series week than I thought it was going to be. But do you watch any of the World Series to come around?
I did. I think there's several different storylines there for the saw hit them quick since we're not an MLB podcast, but good on Freddie Freeman. The story of his dad when he was in high school to what happened with his son a couple years ago. Just by all accounts, a stand-up human being.
Agreed.
Just, had a phenomenal World Series. Whatever it was. Six straight games going back to the last World Series the Dodgers were in where he's had a home run. So, great there. From a universal standpoint, as a Red Sox fan, being alive to see the first curse ended and now to be alive when the second one has started with Mookie Betts being the second coming of Babe Ruth. Well-deserved for that ownership group for letting him go for Jeter Downs and a bag of peanuts.
Yep.
And then on the Yankees front, the fans' indignation and support of what happened with Mookie Betts in the stands in Game 4, they got what they deserved last night to get their hearts ripped out. And then Garrett Cole now gets to go down as Cam Newton, or like Cam Newton, as somebody with just an absolute gutless fundamental. I mean, I know we can all hang up on the Aaron Judge drop last night, but Garrett Cole not covering first to get out of that inning last night, he got everything he deserved in the end there. And as a Red Sox fan, I hate Garrett Cole, so good, couldn't happen to a better guy, in my opinion.
So there you go. You had a great World Series then. That was like a fantastic World Series for you, really. And all things considered, if it's not going to be the Red Sox, you get a lot of great narratives there. I can say that I was really hoping that anybody but the Yankees and Dodgers would make it. Honestly, just wanted to see something different there. But, it's a marquee. It was a little bit of a letdown at the end of the day because the Yankees kind of went out with a whimper in many ways. But that being said, that Dodgers lineup is something else, It really is something else. So kudos to them. But now baseball is in the history books. Of course, baseball season is so long. I think spring training starts next week, right? I mean, it's practically 12 months a year. But we got football to talk about tonight, and we're going to talk about some takeaways from week 8. We're going to be previewing and picking some of our favorite picks in terms of teams and players for week 9, some fantasy football goodness there as well. And, of course, we'll talk about Deontay Johnson and his trade from the Carolina Panthers to the Baltimore Ravens and the Indianapolis Colts giving up on their first-round draft pick, Anthony Richardson. So let's get this thing rolling. Let's start with Deontay Johnson, shall we? Because he obviously was supposedly a big pickup for the Carolina Panthers coming into this year, giving Bryce Young theoretically a wide receiver 1B type weapon in order to get that passing attack kicked into high gear. That never happened in any way, shape, or form. He did tend to excel once they put Andy Dalton in there. Of course, Andy Dalton then became Andy Dalton again and then got injured, and then now Bryce Young is back. And Deontay Johnson, who knows what's going on there because he had an injury and now he's been traded. And boy, oh boy, what a trade it was. Basically, Baltimore gave up a fifth-round pick and got a sixth-round pick back with Deontay Johnson. I mean, talk about losing on a trade there. Carolina Panthers getting basically a ham sandwich on the way out. So what do you think here about the move for the Carolina Panthers to the Baltimore Ravens? Deontay Johnson, what's the impact on the Ravens? What's the impact on the Panthers?
Yeah, so, I mean, Carolina, they're sellers. So, and obviously they didn't get very much in this deal.
No.
But, I hear you on saying, that the Ravens won the deal. I just, I thought I was aligned with everybody. Then this trade happened this season. And what I've realized since then is that I am apparently not as aligned with everybody as I thought, because Deontay Johnson's being talked about as a one or a 1B receiver, and I don't think he is by any means. So I'm having a very hard time getting very excited for this. He feels more in line. Take Zay Flowers out with all the other receivers they've had there over the last several years. He's more of a Marquise Brown than he is a legit number one receiver. So given that they ended up giving up virtually nothing in this deal, I don't think that there's a huge downside to it. This is a guy who, you know, is right now, sorry, I was just trying to pull it up. I thought I had ready to go. He seemed to have cured his drop issues since 2020, which was his really bad year in Pittsburgh.
Right.
He's 37th in the league in drops right now. You know, and when you look at PFF, his overall grade is 68.1 on the year. He's a 45th receiver ranked in football. So again, that's more of the guys that's Rashard Bateman territory, who they already have. So again, low risk because essentially a pick swap. It's not even trading a pick for him. They pick swapped on it. So
yeah,
as far as like from a GM standpoint, I look at the Ravens and say, okay, worth a flyer. But the way it's been talked about this week, I look at it and go, and he's 28. So it's not like they took a flyer on a 24-year-old kid who struggled somewhere. And there's also been, I don't know how firm everything's been, but there's been some personality / locker room type issues with him, both in Pittsburgh and in Carolina. So I don't know. Again, when you start to go multiple places and you're kind of a headache and your production's not that great, I don't have a lot of use for those kind of players. So
yeah,
that was very high. If you go back and listen to the archives of this podcast,
right,
I was very high on Deontay Johnson when he came out. So this is not that I've had it out for him since day one. I've let the data dictate how I feel now. And the way I feel is that big whoop kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think that obviously the Carolina Panthers overvalued Deontay Johnson in the offseason and then paid the price. I mean, that's kind of what I'm seeing here. And honestly, Deontay Johnson has been, an okay receiver in the NFL, but other than 2021, where he managed to total up 1,161 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns, he has not come close to that since. In 2022, Pittsburgh, 882 yards, 0 receiving touchdowns, and then, of course, 717 yards on a shortened season and 5 receiving touchdowns in 2023. And it's not even worth talking about what happened in Carolina so far. It's been an absolute out-and-out disaster. So, really, I totally agree with you. I mean, as a depth play for the Baltimore Ravens, great. But do they really need a depth play? I don't know. I mean, Nelson Aguilar seems fine. I just don't know if there's any need for it. But, you're swapping a pick. No big deal. Get them in there, and I'm sure that's great depth to have for the Ravens. I think what this really does impact, though, is that it opens things up even more for Lamar Jackson, because defenses do have to key on Deontay Johnson. They do have to actually pay him some attention, and that means Lamar Jackson will probably pick up a couple extra rush yards, pick up a couple extra receptions. I think this may even open up Zay Flowers a little bit. I think it actually even opens up Derrick Henry, if that's at all possible, in a career year. So good move probably for the team in total. Probably not much more of a lateral move for Deontay Johnson himself. Let's talk about Anthony Richardson, because I find this fascinating. The Indianapolis Colts decide to bench Anthony Richardson this week for Joe Flacco. Interesting, because Anthony Richardson obviously has not been performing up to snuff. His passing rate has been down in the dumps. It's been absolutely abysmal. His completion percentage also quite low, probably the lowest in the active quarterbacks in the NFL at this point. Of course, some of it due to injury, perhaps, but he has not taken a step forward. But to give up this early on a guy who had a ton of hype last year and this year, what do you think about benching Anthony Richardson? And Coach Steichen made it sound like this is permanent for the season. So it doesn't look like they're going to bring him back like they did with Bryce Young in Carolina. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Carolina's getting it wrong too, but you know, this is as I've gotten older, you know, and as we've done this football garbage time writing and podcast now for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started, I didn't really watch the college game very much. And I'm just talking about from an analyst, because obviously, you know, obviously the people in Indianapolis have watched it. But like you just mentioned, his hype was way overblown. And I think it's because people last year saw the massive arm talent and plays from Anthony Richardson and said, you know, oh my God, this kid can play. But as someone put it the other day on Twitter, which I thought was pretty funny, it's not nice, but it said, so shocking that a quarterback that never was any good in college is not any good in the NFL, which is the story of Anthony Richardson. Now, you know, in a less rude way than that, he was a project quarterback. And so the Colts handled this all wrong. He should have never been the week one starter last year. You know, I don't believe in holding quarterbacks back. Like, I don't believe that the, you know, I think you got to do it independent based on each individual player. So when people say like, oh, think of all the great guys who sat a year, so you should sit quarterbacks a year. Like, no, like some guys are, you know, we're seeing this in New England right now. Drake May is very clearly getting better from in-game reps. So they didn't rush him at the beginning of the year when they didn't think he was ready. He then got, you know, they then felt they needed to make the switch, and they did, and now he's getting better week by week. So that works for Drake May. That was never Anthony Richardson. Richardson should have absolutely been a candidate for entire season to sit and grow and mature and learn, you know, outside of the throwing stuff. I mean, he got hurt earlier this year, basically doing the same thing he did last year. And I know he's big, but like even if you're big and you're a quarterback, you can't take all those shots. You got to get down. You got to get out of bounds. You can't play like that. And so I see mentally not maturing. And then, you know, it was so funny. The stat line this weekend was, I think in the first half, he was like 2 of 15 for 80 yards and a touchdown. And it was like one of the completions was a 60-yard touchdown, which is so Anthony Richardson. So if you take that out, he was actually 1 of 14 for like 15 yards. So like, you know, that's who he is though. And so again, his hype was way overblown. They needed to be patient with him. They weren't. And now they're benching him because he's exactly who everyone that, you know, paid attention to the college as well knew who he was. So this is really just, this story to me is not Anthony Richardson. The story to me is the Indianapolis Colts, a franchise who, you know, seemed to get almost lucky by, you know, no pun intended, getting luck to follow up Peyton, and then he retires early, and they've since just kind of been spinning their wheels on, you know, veteran who's about to retire after veteran who's about to retire, and they go and draft this kid and then play him way too early, and now they've moved on to him from him too early, and again the same thing with Carolina. Once you bench the kid you brought in, you know, we've seen this with Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, over and over again. Like, you can't go back to that person. So this just an absolute mishandling of the entire situation from the Colts, from something that should have been so predictable. Again, I always go back to it, that play a couple – two years ago, his senior year against – I forget who it was, but it was opening night when he was a Gator, and he spins out of three tackles and makes the jump throw to the corner of the end zone. Like, he can give you that. But he needed a lot of polishing in his game, and Indianapolis just didn't show the patience to do it.
Yeah, and his completion percentage, as I was alluding to before, 44.4%. That's the lowest of any quarterback that had a start this season compiled. It's basically 42nd in the NFL. Also, the second lowest passer rating in the NFL. The only quarterback of a lower passer rating is Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who only had one game. And, you know, so, you know, take it for what you will, but 57.2%. I mean, 57.2 passer rating, pretty bad. Even the likes of Mason Rudolph and Will Levis did better than him. So, yeah, it's a mess. It's a complete mess. Now, obviously, you go to QBR and you think he was going to improve because of all the rushing yards. Not so fast. QBR also quite low. He's down at 38. So, I mean, like, there really isn't – everyone says he's a great scrambling quarterback, but even taking that into account as a quarterback, he is fourth worst in terms of QBR rating. You know, again, only Gardner Minshew, Will Levis, and Deshaun Watson being worse than him. So, you know, it's tough, but I do agree with you. I don't think they should have thrown him out there, and I don't think they gave him enough time to marinate. He did not have an opportunity to improve in terms of passing, and they gave him the targets, but he never had the connection. So I agree Joe Flacco gives him the best chance to win now, but what does it get you, Indianapolis Colts? What does it get you having Joe Flacco win a couple of games for you? It doesn't get you anything. So, it basically kiboshes next year when you're probably going to have to do a little bit more soul searching, some rebuilding through the draft and so on. And that's not going to help you winning three or four more games with Joe Flacco. For fantasy, though, if you have those wide receivers in Indianapolis like Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, and so on and so forth, then, yeah, you know, bully for you, because this is obviously a good move for you guys. All right, let's move on here and talk a little bit about week 8 of the NFL. We didn't get a chance to do our week 8 takeaways, so I'm going to give us both one takeaway each on week 8. What's your big takeaway for week 8 of the NFL?
So my big takeaway is, and, you know, this is pretty universal. You know, this is not directed at one person individually, and honestly, probably not directed at you at all because of your fandom.
I'm already starting to worry about what this is since you called me out.
I would like an apology from the football community at large that ever tried to mention Aaron Rodgers in the same breath as Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, hell, even Ben Roethlisberger. I've been saying this, again, we've done this long enough now. I've been saying this for 6, 7, 8 years on the show, that if he's as good as everyone says he is, I don't tell me about their defense. Don't tell me about his coaching. Don't tell me about the offensive weapons. He should have gone to at least 3 Super Bowls, and he should have had a second win on there. The fact that he's been the bad man, as they always say on First Take, and he's a bad man. He's a loser is what he is from an NFL standpoint.
Literally.
Nothing against him as a person. But as a player, loser. Loser mentality. And he's been a loser since he's gotten to New York. Every freaking time there's a misplay. It's like someone said this the other day, and I love them for it, because I kept trying to think. I'm like, what do I know this from? He pans. He somehow knows where all the cameras are. He pans to a camera with a dopey-looking face after every missed throw like he's Jim from The Office. It's wild. It's like it's never his fault. He's always immediately finding the camera to make the face in there, and it's just like, dude, you came in out of shape last year. That's why you had a calf strain, and your calf strain turned into an Achilles. That is an avoidable injury. Everyone will tell you that. That was not that. And so, you know, you have that last year. Then he gives you the whole spiel last year about how, oh, if they just had a few more weeks, he could have come back. Or if the Jets were still competitive, he would have come back, because he had that experimental surgery last year. He can't move this year. He was coming back and playing football last year. Oh, shut up. Miss me with that. And then, you know, and the post-game quotes are getting so annoying. The other one the other day, like, I've been in the darkness. We have to go into the darkness.
Oh,
shut
God,
off,
I couldn't stand that.
God, you're a loser. You're a loser. Your whole career has been a loser. The entire Jets operation now is the friends and, well, I guess not family, because he did cut them off. But,
but sorry,
the friends,
no family.
And peers of Aaron Rodgers. He has everyone in place that he wanted there, and they still can't win.
No.
They still suck.
No,
they don't. So,
in fact, he's probably responsible, and he's denied this, but obviously he's responsible in part for the firing of Robert Saleh after only 5 games. Total backfire. I mean, the Jets were so unprepared. They had to burn 3 timeouts in the first quarter last week because the play clock was about to expire each time because they couldn't figure out what the heck they were doing. I mean, like, it's just absolutely – they absolutely deserve what they get. 2-6, biggest bust in the league so far. There's no possible way they turn this around, I don't think. I'll eat my words if they do, but I don't think they're going to do it. But you know what? Aaron Rodgers has been a big part of that, but their defense also totally fell apart. The entire Hassan Riddick holdout, and he didn't do anything when he got back in there, only 2 pressures and 26 snaps. Sauce Gardner gave up a big play late in the game, totally let them down. And, of course, Greg Zuerlein, part of their special teams, their kicker, just been terrible. I mean, he's just been absolutely terrible. He's missed a league-leading 6 field goals this year. Every part of that team is a disaster. Every part of that team is a disaster. So Aaron Rodgers, I know it all starts with him, and he is a big part of why they are a disaster right now, because there's no leadership in that locker room whatsoever. But the entire Jets, complete and utter burning trash heap at this point. That's all I got to say about that.
You will always be losers. Don't ever forget it. Doesn't matter if Tom Brady's not here anymore. Okay. It's Josh Allen now. The Dolphins will get on their feet before you get on your feet. New York Jets, you are a loser franchise with a bad owner. Losers, losers, losers. Enjoy. You'll never win. It'll never happen. It's the best thing in sports to me. Outside of Dawson teams winning, the New York Jets will always be a shitbag organization, and that makes me, oh, God, it fills my heart. It's almost Christmas time, so I'll say it makes me the Grinch. My heart grows 3 times every time you guys lose another season.
I love it. I love it. You know, by the way, I love the reference to The Office, but I could hear all of Gen Z just turning the podcast off at that point. So thanks for that.
Well, if you don't like The Office, you're stupid. So I don't want you listening anyway. So if you are still hanging on, go ahead and turn off the dial.
Okay, all right. But please click, right? Keep clicking. I don't have to listen. You just got to click. I will say one thing. I'll add one takeaway to the weekend, and that's the Miami Dolphins making a little bit of a comeback here of Tua in there. It's kind of interesting because I was never a Tua fan, but it's pretty clear that the Dolphins are complete trash without Tua. I mean, they are the NFL's worst scoring offense. They put up a season-high 27 points and 377 yards with Tua in the offense. Without them, they were literally the worst scoring offense in the NFL. So complete turnaround, obviously. I think that's a huge get for them to get back on the field. You know, you can say what you want about the fact he's had the multiple he had the multiple concussions and he's now back. But that and not wearing the I guess the guardian cap, he decided not to wear it. You know, he is who he is, I suppose. But that being said, Dolphins fans must be excited about the fact that he's come back. And it's amazing what kind of impact they can have, even if you have good players around the team outside of the quarterback position. All right, let's talk about Week 9, shall we? So let's talk about who you are looking at here, Ryan. What big games are you looking at a Week 9, and can you give us a lock of the week and maybe even pick an upset for us?
Whew. All right. Lots of
I just kind of loaded it on. I'm just going to back the dump truck up. Just
a lot at me,
carry the podcast, Ryan. Just carry the podcast.
Yeah. So I guess I'll go through it bit by bit.
Yep.
I mean, I think the most interesting game is Sunday at 4:25. You know, your division, but not your team. The Detroit Lions and Green Bay Packers, 6-1 versus 6-2. Good divisional football. As we saw last week, the Patriots upsetting the Jets, the Browns upsetting the Ravens. Like,
oof.
You know, it's one of those old adages, but it's true. Division games just are a different beast than the NFL.
Agree.
So those always bring a different level. You know, and so I'm really looking forward to that because, you know, I think if there's one team that has a actual realistic shot of taking down Kansas City this year, it's Detroit. And this is a measuring stick game for the Lions, you know, to see what they can do here. You know, and actually I hadn't even thought about this, but they were talking about on the local radio today, I think about because of this game specifically, I missed the opening segment, but they were talking about how, you know, dome teams get a perception of soft. And when you look at it, there's really only been three dome teams, and one did it twice, but three dome teams like in the last 30 years to win a Super Bowl. And it's the Rams, who did it twice, 20 years apart. The Colts and the Saints once each.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the Lions are a little bit of an outlier there. Like, you know, typically, you know, especially because, you know, you would have to get home field advantage and all that. So anyways, I think these games are really important because I like Detroit. Detroit's a really good football team, but I wonder if it's the dome thing or if it's Jared Goff at quarterback. There's still something there that every time I really get hyped on the Lions, I go back and go, the Lions are going to really win the Super Bowl, and they're going to really win the Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Like, those 49ers teams couldn't get done, but here comes Jared Goff and the Lions, and they're going to do it. So
I love it.
I'm rooting for them to do it. So I would like them to go out and make it, you know, not just win this weekend, but have a statement win a divisional opponent. So
yeah, I love the narrative here, obviously. And Jared Goff, man, he's having a season to remember. 140 for 189, 1,695 yards already, 13 touchdowns, just 4 INTs. I mean, Jared Goff is a whole new guy. It's amazing if you think about it, right? You know, remember the entire trade for Matt Stafford and all the Lions fans, oh, we're going to get Jared Goff. He'll be just a stopgap solution until we draft somebody. Turns out he was the answer. I just had to get all the right pieces around him. You know, you got Amon-Ra St. Brown, you got Sam Laporta, you got Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery back there. I mean, it's a great, great group there. I mean, they're going to be probably minus Jameson Williams more than 2 weeks now that he's under investigation for that weird traffic stop. But that being said, I think they can do it without him. So I don't think that's a big deal. The only concern is Jordan Love with the injury. He has the groin injury. He did practice limited fashion today. I sure hope he plays because I want to see how this plays out with both teams at full strength, right? I don't want to see Jared Goff versus Malik Willis, although Malik Willis has been pleasantly good this year, shockingly good, I should say, this year playing for the Packers. So I guess that says something about those Tennessee Titans and what they're doing. They may be the Jets of the – they may be the Tennessee version of the Jets and how they treat their quarterbacks. But that being said, I totally agree. I love that. I love that matchup. That's one that I'm really looking forward to, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. And you want to pick any winners and losers in that game? Any guys you would like to call out as being the big hero of the Detroit-Green Bay game?
You know, now I'm going to talk out my ass because I don't have the stats right in front of me.
Okay.
But you threw me
that's the way we love it.
Spot. I mean, I think Amon-Ra has had a fine season, but not a season at his level. I'm looking for him to have one of his – to have his best game of the season this week.
Love it.
And then, again, I think against – I think ball control coming to this too. So I think really leaning on David Montgomery will be important for the Lions. So – those two. And just one honorary mention just in terms of games, you know, the Minnesota-Indianapolis game I think is important to keep an eye on too, because Minnesota got off that great start. They've been two game skid here. I know we're all up in arms about the missed face mask call last week, which was egregious, but you know,
yep.
They were down by eight, you know,
yeah.
with their throwing from their own end zone. So, and it's not like that was like a shoe-in win that they got robbed of. Like, yeah, terrible miss, but they've fallen back down to earth. So I think that's another interesting, again, apparently I'm interested in all the NFC North except for your
my Bears, my poor
Bears. But that's, they can't stop a Hail Mary. So that's on them.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Tyreek Stevenson, that entire thing was so brutal. I can tell you the highs and lows of managing to get ahead and get a 2-point conversion with 23 seconds left just to lose it on a Hail Mary. That is probably the worst 23 seconds of my football watching career. So that was bad for sure. I can tell you that I am going to have my eyes on a couple things this week, and I do want to call out the fact that I'm really kind of interested to see what happens with Bo Nix, because he had his breakout performance against, of course, admittedly the worst defense in the NFL, maybe the worst defense in the last 10 years, the Carolina Panthers. But Baltimore Ravens are defeatable. We obviously saw them lose last week to the Cleveland Browns and Jameis Winston. So I'd be interested to see what happens. Baltimore Ravens, uncharacteristically, the worst pass defense in the NFL right now. So I have my eye... one eye here on Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos. I don't know if Sean Payton knew what he was doing or not when he drafted him, but we were all shocked when he did it, and it seems to be working out right now. So Denver Broncos, I have my eye on you. Bo Nix, I have my eye on you. And I think actually that Bo Nix makes for a nice punt play in DFS and for fantasy football if you don't have another option as well. And I will say one more thing about next week. New Orleans Saints, I think they get back on track with Derek Carr coming on playing the Carolina Panthers. Basically, the way to get back on track in the NFL is play the Carolina Panthers. I mean, that's just hands down the easiest way to get your team back on track. So I love that. So we didn't actually get there, but you want to pick one game that you're going to say is the lock of the week. Is there a game here that you think is definitely going to happen if somebody's going to play in an eliminator pool or something?
Yeah,
I can see you're really excited about me asking you that question.
Well, just this season's been so unpredictable, and I got knocked out of like every one of my knockout pools in the first 3 weeks. So,
yeah.
Oh, not the person to ask.
So did everybody.
But one team that's absolutely on the verge of firing their coach, and another team that unfortunately seems to be ascending, even though I wish they'd fire their coach. But I'll take Philly over Jacksonville as my lock. And then as my upset, because you mentioned this earlier, but it was my upset, provided Drake May plays, the Patriots right now, or last I looked, were dogs to Tennessee this weekend. If Drake plays, I'm taking New England over Tennessee in that game.
Yep, I can see that happening. Both of those things look like they're reasonable picks. And I actually have a lock of the week. The team I just talked about, New Orleans Saints over the Carolina Panthers. As I mentioned, the Panthers defense allowed the second most yards, 387.5, and the most points, 33.7 per game of any team this season. And the Saints, they got Derek Carr back, and Alvin Kamara is having a little bit of resurgence when Derek Carr is on the field. So I can see the New Orleans Saints being a lock of the week over the Carolina Panthers. My upset is tonight, happening right now, hopefully. I don't know what's going to happen, but Houston Texans are actually not favored because of the fact they lost Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins is out. The Jets are actually favored, so I am taking the Texans over the Jets as my upset of the week. Probably too late to bet on that, but maybe not, because they're still 0-0 in the first, so go run out and make your bet if you want to. All right, that takes us to the end of the show. Let me go ahead and hit the air horn on the show here. All right, Ryan, give us your social media so people can follow you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter over at Twitter at Ryan. Jesus Christ! This
whoa, shocking.
At Ryan Whitfield, N-E. And then as a side note, I did start doing some writing or contributing for the Miami Hurricanes fan cited page. So at Canes Warning,
nice.
FS is the handle there. So go read my articles mainly. Everyone's.
Yeah. Don't read anything else. Just his articles.
I have no love for the Miami Hurricanes.
I
just fan cited. I didn't say that. Read everybody's, but especially if you see my name pop up.
No, I'm saying that. I'm saying don't read anything about the Miami Hurricanes, just your articles. I'm affirmatively saying that.
All right, I don't co-sign
that.
On that.
All right, so thank you. You can find me. Sorry. You can find me at FB Garbage Time on Twitter /X. You can also find me at the Football Garbage Time page on Facebook. As usual, thank you for listening and wasting time with us. Until next time, enjoy your NFL week.
Congrats to Shohei Ohtani, who, just for the record as we fade out here, did commit a gambling scandal as bad as Pete Rose and got rewarded with a World Series. Good for him. Good on him.
Way to go. Showtime.
No accountability as long as you're the best player in the league.
I love it. That's American sports for you.